Hello, my name is John Owen. I'd like to welcome you to the Whence We Came Project Podcast, an archived audio anthology of American lives, both local and legendary, is told by the Americans that live them. The following is my conversation with Miss Louise Young. In total transparency, I know Miss Louise. We share an ancestor or two. And although it's been over 50 years since we've spoken, as we sat on our beautiful back porch and reminisced, it seemed like only last week. An educated and cultured businesswoman, Miss Louise's memory is quite remarkable, and her storytelling skills would make William Faulkner proud. Not only does she cherish the history of White County, Tennessee, her very life and the lives of her relatives are woven deeply into the tapestry of this history. Such an articulate and engaging lady. I hope that you enjoy our conversation. Well, hello, Miss Louise. How are you today?
I'm fine, John. I hope you are.
Oh, I'm wonderful. Thank you so much. And such a blessing for you to take the time to sit down and talk with us today. I'm just more ecstatic about it than you can even imagine. And we're sitting out here on your beautiful back porch and enjoying the breeze and the flowers and whatever. This is really a blessing.
And well, I've been looking forward to it because you stirred up some interest in me last week that I had guessed kind of put on the back burner.
Yes, ma'am.
And in fact, where we're sitting right now was part of Granny and Grandpa Gillen's farm.
Well, I was going to ask you that question.
Yes, sure was.
Like, if we're starting the Book of Louise,
okay.
let's just, when and where did it start, and let's just start talking there.
Okay, well, you want to know where I was born?
Yes, ma'am.
I was born in a hospital, but I don't know that my brother was. He's 10 years older than me.
Yes, ma'am, he may not
and,
have been.
I was born in Sparta, but I always lived in the house up in the country, the one known as the Big Stone House.
Yes, ma'am.
And that came down through my father's family.
Okay.
And but that's where I was raised, grew up there, and I always lived there.
Now, did Sam Breeding, your father?
Yes.
His father built that home, or was
his father built the home? But he did not originally own the property. My grandmother Breeding was a Johnson, and now this is hard for me to really back it up, but a lady who is, she's actually an in-law in the Johnson family, but she's done tremendous work digging up history on them.
Yes, ma'am.
And I've talked with her at length, and she says that the best she can find, the great-great-grandfather owns substantial acreage up in there in what is now goes on up to Johnson's Chapel.
Yes, ma'am.
Up in there and comes back down to the Cashkiller.
Oh, wow.
And when he died, his children, that he had a number of them, they, of course, inherited it.
Yes, ma'am.
So my grandfather Breeding, as I've been told, he bought out the other siblings' interest in a portion of it. And that's where what was known as our farm.
Now, do you remember him? Was he living during your life?
No, okay. I never knew him. I barely knew my grandfather Breeding.
Oh, really?
But never knew the great-grandfather. My grandfather Breeding, I think he died in 46. In fact, he and Grandpa Gillen both died the same year. They, of course, people didn't live as long back then.
Yes, ma'am.
But they both had extensive heart problems. But now, my grandfather Breeding, he moved from the home up there in, I think, 29. He graduated from Nashville Medical College. And then he went to New York and had a little postgraduate course, and then he settled back up in the country. But he spent a few years, and I can't document how many years, but I know he was up there in 1908 on the mountain in the mining settlement.
That's Bonaire?
Bonaire.
Yes, ma'am.
Uh-huh. And there was four different communities up there, and each one was owned by a separate company. And they each one had their own community.
Oh.
They had, so there was Bonaire, Ravenscroft, Eastland, and Clifty, I think.
Okay.
And each company then had their own community, and they had their own stores, in most cases their own church. They had houses.
Really?
And then they had their own doctor. So he was a doctor for the Ravenscroft mine.
Yes, ma'am.
And,
would there have been enough miners for that to be his total practice, or did he practice?
Yes, it was while he was up there.
Yes, ma'am.
And I don't know how long he was out there. I can't find when he started and when he stopped, but I do know he was there in 1908.
Wow.
I think he had to have come back, though, shortly after that, because he built the house up in the country that I grew up in 1912.
Okay, so that house was built in
1912. Uh-huh.
Now, is it true that all of those stones are taken from that property?
Yes. That house is kind of between two mountains.
Yes,
and,
ma'am.
And this black stone mason, they said he was the best one in the country.
Yes, ma'am.
And he started laying the stone. And then he ran out.
Oh, no.
Well, Grandpa and Grandma just, you know, they just really went berserk. And he said, "Don't worry. Don't worry, Dr. Breeding. We'll go right over here on the other side of the highway, and we'll go up on that mountain the same height, and we'll find the same stone." And they did.
That is amazing. What an amazing story.
It was. And that stone is, I've been told now, John, that it's 18 inches thick.
I would believe it.
So I never had air conditioning. We never even owned a fan.
And it stayed cool.
And it was right there. And as you went on up, most of the farm was up in England's Cove.
Okay.
And it went right up there, and that breeze would come down. I never sat out on the front porch that I didn't have a sweater on.
That is amazing.
And in the summertime, it might be a little bit hot out in the yard, but still people just sat out in the yard. They had a fireplace in each room, and they had a grate in it so they could use coal instead of wood. Because we had a coal mine on the property.
Okay.
And Dad, he mined coal for a little while, but not too long. The only thing I remember about that was the trucks would go up there and get the coal and come back by and get it weighed, and they'd come by and give Mom the receipt.
Wow.
That's all I remember about that.
Yes, ma'am.
But then when the union started moving in and there began to be a lot of problems around in the area, Dad said, "I'm closing it."
How long did Dr. Breeding practice, do you know?
He practiced till, I'm guessing, 29. Now, the reason I'm going on, my brother was born in 27. And Mom always said they moved up in the country when he was 2 years old.
Okay.
So that would be 29. And at that point, now, Granddaddy Breeding had been practicing on horseback in that whole area, Cherry
wow.
Creek. He had a brother who was a doctor up in Overton County.
Really?
Mm-hmm. But in 29, he moved to Nashville and served as Assistant Commissioner of Health. And I don't know exactly how long and when he retired, but his daughter, at the time he went down there, she was not married, and she lived with him. But then she later married a fella who was working for WLAC in Nashville.
I did not know that.
Yeah. In fact, he was really good in radio, and eventually they moved to Florida, and she had married, and so they just all moved to Florida because Granddaddy then was retired, and so they moved down there, and Uncle Odell had found a station there in Lakeland, Florida.
Yes, ma'am.
That was about to go under.
Yes, ma'am.
And he bought it. I'm sure at the whole family's demise, buying that thing. It's already on the ground. But anyway, he went down there and he built it up, and he became affiliated with NBC. And it became a flourishing radio station. Tell you something funny about radio and politics. Of course, my dad loved sports.
Yes, ma'am.
Uncle Odell thought it was just next thing to needing to be buried. He could see no benefit to sports. But he knew how Dad loved him. So we always went down there around Christmas and spent a week. So he called Dad one year and said, "Sam, would you like to go to the Orange Bowl?" Oh, Dad says, "Are you kidding?"
Absolutely.
He said, "Yep." Says, "I'll get you tickets." So we went, it came time to go down on New Year's Day, and we went, and they looked that ticket, and they ushered us right down to field level.
Oh, no. Are you serious?
No, I'm not. I thought those players were going to run right over me. Oh, of course, Dad just had a ball. Well, the next year, Dad saw him. He said, "Odell, you think you can get me some tickets to the Orange Bowl again this year?" Uncle Odell said, "Yes, I probably can, but they won't be what they were last year," says Sam. "My politics won right this year."
Great lesson.
It was quite an adventure.
Absolutely.
And, so they lived there, and then he passed away in 46. But now my grandmother lived on to, she died in 61.
Really? Mm-hmm. Down in Florida?
Yes.
Wow. So that's the breeding side, your father's side.
Right, right.
Let's talk a bit about your mother's side.
Okay, the mother was a Gillan. And the breedings, a lot of them lived actually about a mile this side of the stone house, back towards Florida.
Oh, okay.
The Littles were up in England Cove.
Now, remind me, and in full disclosure for people listening, Miss Louise's mother was my grandmother's first cousin.
Right.
So I'm asking some of these questions from my perspective selfishly to know for myself and for the families to know. Tell me, so the England Cove is on the Monterey side of the Big Stone House?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Okay.
England Cove is just on, from our house, it was across the river.
Okay.
The river split our farm, but not in the middle. There was only 35 acres of the farm on the south side of the river.
Oh, really?
And so Dad had to drive about 4 miles around and cross the bridge to get into the cove where his farm was. But several of the Littles were up there in England's Cove. I remember a few families up there, and then there was a road that went off, to the left. I don't know my directions too well, but it was down lower. Now, when you went up to where the Littles lived, you were getting ready to go up the mountain.
Okay.
And that's where the mines was.
Oh, okay.
And the road would have eventually brought you out up here at Ravenscroft.
Yes, ma'am.
And was very, very well traveled for a long time, but that now it's completely blocked off.
Welcome to the Whence We Came Project Podcast. My name is John Owen. The following is my conversation with Miss Louise Young.
And the road would have eventually brought you out up here at Ravenscroft.
Yes, ma'am.
And was very, very well traveled for a long time. But anyway, there were several families that lived over there kind of to the left as you went up the road. And I remember Aunt Ida, Granny's sister, lived there, Ida Little Angel.
Okay.
And Mr. Angel was her second husband. She had, her first husband died, and she had only one son with him. But she lived there. I remember where she lived. And then
when did she pass away, Miss Louise? Do you remember?
No.
I think I remember her. So it had to
sure
be after.
Yeah.
I was born in 57, so it had to be probably
I'm
early
sure
60s.
That you do. I don't remember. I mean, I've got it here somewhere.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
But I don't remember exactly when she died, but. But she had a daughter who never married.
Okay.
Her daughter, Mary Little.
Really?
Uh-huh. She married a fella from over in Blue Spring. Now, Blue Spring, as you go up Highway 84, you veer off to the right, and that's the Blue Spring Road.
I don't think I've ever heard of that.
And then you go on up Highway 84, and you end up in, that's the Big Springs area.
I see.
Which is where I was raised.
So now, where was Aunt Mattie Pearl raised?
She was raised.
That's Miss Louise's mother.
Yeah, she was actually raised over in Gear Cove.
You're saying, is it Gear?
Gear, G E E R.
I've never even heard of that.
Really?
I need to write that down. Yes, ma'am.
Gear. That her father, George Gillan, and when she and Grandpa married, they lived with them for a good while, and my mother was born there.
Really?
But then, as time went on, somewhere, Granny and Grandpa bought this farm down here. And Mom always told me that she moved to town when she was 6 years old. So that would have been 1909.
Your mother, Aunt Mattie Pearl, had some of her youth in Aunt Gussie's house?
Oh, yes. She and my father were married in the lawn out there at the front porch.
Are you serious? Uh-huh. I had no idea.
Uh-huh.
I had no idea. Now, this would be your grandfather's. When did your grandfather pass away? When did Aunt Gussie's husband pass away?
1946.
And, Aunt Gussie lived to be almost 100, didn't she?
She was 98. And, she Oh, independent would not be strong enough.
I think you may have a little of that in you as well.
Well, I think genes do tend to carry on.
Yes, ma'am.
But her goal was she'd always made tomato juice from her own tomatoes, of course. And she wanted to make tomato juice on her 98th birthday. And she did.
And she did.
Candy. And in November, she died. But her tomatoes, there's a story there.
Yes, ma'am.
There was always family competition between myself, my brother, my mother, and Granny Gillen.
Okay.
Who got the first and the best tomatoes. The three of us could never match Granny Gillen for some reason. We just couldn't. She beat us on the season, she beat us on the quality, she's beat us on everything. Well, one day Bob came over here, he said, "Well, Louise, I know now why Granny always has the best tomato crop." Says, "I went in her old smokehouse out there, and so you know what I found? I found a 2 big scuttles of wood dirt and manure."
Oh, no.
Says, "That's what she's putting on those tomatoes."
That was good.
But
and then my great-grandfather lived right next door, I think,
yes,
on property that she had given him. Yes,
but not initially. He moved down, I don't know the dates on this, when he moved out of England Cove and where he went, but he ended up in one of the northern states.
Yes, ma'am.
And worked there a while. And then he came back here and actually worked with my dad in the seed processing business.
When did your father close that store, that feed place?
You know, John, I don't know, because he died in 71, and he was not in good health several years before that.
Yes, ma'am.
And he was had stopped all. Well, of course, the seed processing business, I don't know whether it kind of, I don't think it faltered, because I was reading a little of it about it this morning, and it's still going, in fact.
Wow.
Raising hybrid seed corn.
Yes, ma'am.
But then he added a feed mill.
Okay.
And, of course, the worst two things he could have done with asthma.
Oh, no.
And
he got to
where he just wasn't able. His doctor told him he's going to have to settle down and be a gentleman farmer. Well, Dad didn't even know the meaning of that. But I'm going to say he probably, I just don't know. Not much after the 50s.
Well, now,
I
noticed that Monterey Highway is named Sam Evans Breeding. Is that your dad or
your
grandfather?
That's my dad.
That's your dad. So he was Sam Evans.
Yes, he worked for years to try to get that road improved. It used to be just a pipe. Then they came along. Tell you what he said about it. They came along. We had this little crooked road going up there. They came on and tarred and chipped it, you know.
Yes, ma'am.
Dad came in one day and he said, "Well, I reckon the governor has a friend in the yellow paint business." Says, "They put a stripe down the middle of the road, but there's not room on either side for a car."
Good try.
But that was the beginning of his efforts to. And of course, Buford Ellington had a farm history, and he was governor at the time. And Dad, he took my oldest son with him one time when he went down and visited with the governor.
Really?
And the governor gave him a set of cufflinks. Oh, till right now, that's Gillen's most precious treasure.
That is great.
But Dad was great to take his grandchildren and children with him, you know.
Yeah.
He used to take me up when he was raising hybrid seed corn. He had a couple of farms contracted, and one of them was up in Overton County.
Okay.
Now, you go up in Overton County, and there's a hollow up there. Roaring River comes right down through it. But it's just about like a tunnel. I mean, it's dark.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
And I was just little. And he had to go over there and check on the crop that they were growing for him. And he said, "You can go with me." So I did. And I remember being scared to death in that place. Oh, it was
so dark.
Yes, ma'am. And I thought, I'd be glad when we get back home.
I have a question for you, and you may not know, but your great-grandfather would be Elijah Little, correct?
Yes.
Elijah, and he married Martha Snodgrass. I did some work when I came home.
Yes.
His father was Freeland Simpson Little.
Yes.
And he married a Rebecca England.
Right.
Is that England Cove, or is that?
I'm assuming it is.
Okay.
But I don't have not researched it enough to really know.
Yes, ma'am. It just kind of stood out to me because I know that my grandmother used to call that area where she was born England Cove.
England Cove. I have reason to think it would almost have to be.
Yes, ma'am.
Because back then, courting couples stayed within the community.
Welcome to the Whence We Came Project Podcast. My name is John Owen. The following is my conversation with Miss Louise Young. Your great-grandfather would be Elijah Little, correct?
Yes.
Elijah, and he married Martha Snodgrass. His father was Freeland Simpson Little.
Yes.
And he married a Rebecca England.
Right.
Is that England Cove, or is that...
I'm assuming it is.
Okay.
But I have not researched it enough to really know.
And there is a cemetery up there. You had mentioned Champ Ferguson.
As you leave the stone house, you go about a quarter of a mile, I guess. There's a cemetery, France Cemetery.
Yes, ma'am.
It's up on the right. And supposedly, Champ Ferguson is buried there.
Really?
Now, there's been a lot of controversy over that.
Oh, really?
There's about as many say he's not as that say he is.
I didn't realize that.
But, in fact, there was a fella showed up down at the museum here one day. He had come about three times before he told them who he was. And finally, he told them that he gave me his name, and he said, "I'm actually a descendant of Champ Ferguson."
Wow.
Of course, their mouths dropped open.
Yes, ma'am.
And he said, "And I can prove it. I've got plenty of proof." Well, he never did bring the proof. Supposedly, he was going to bring us a lot of memorabilia from Champ and all, but his story was that somehow they appeared to be hanging Champ, but his body went down and somebody retrieved it, and that he went to Oklahoma to live.
Continued living.
Continued living.
Oh, my Lord.
And remained the rest
of his
life.
I've never heard that.
Oh, there's a lot of history. And I tell you, that fella, Brenda called me one day. She says, "Mr. What was his name? Mr. Joe or Mr. something is here. If you want to come over," I said, "I'll be right there." And I listened to that man for an hour and a half.
Yes, ma'am.
And, John, I never could find any holes in his story.
Really?
He even showed me a map. He just sketched out a map.
Yes, ma'am.
And he said, "Now, this is where his house was, this is where the spring was, and this is where the pond was. When I was little, a dad would take me down there. That we had this, I told you, 35 acres on that side of the river."
Yes, ma'am.
The field was called the Ferguson Field.
Really?
That's what it had always been referred to as when in my lifetime.
Yes, ma'am.
Where he pinpointed the house and the spring and the pond was exactly where my father always said the pond and the spring were.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
And most likely, Champ actually owned that field. Because when he went to Nashville to have his trial, he pledged his land holdings, which at that time was about 250 acres.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, and it was over there, including the field on our place, back towards Sparta and around kind of through Gear Cove.
Wow.
And he pledged it to these lawyers, and they...
Oh.
Got it all. Of course, they didn't do a very good job representing him.
They didn't represent him very well at all.
They got it, and then they just sold it off.
Well, you know, you just reminded me of something. The last time, I guess, I was with my great-grandfather, Simpson Buster.
Yeah.
And I guess your father, I guess, if I remember correctly. It was your dad.
Mm-hmm.
It was Uncle Sam. We went. We saw part of the property across the street. We had to go up a road and whatever. But he also, that same time in the truck, he and Grandpa went to an area, and we got out of the truck, and he told me that there was a Civil War battle in that area somewhere.
Oh, yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. One of the well-known battles took place in what's called Dug Hill.
Dug Hill?
And Dug Hill was always, as you went up 84, before you turned to go across the river to get to our farm.
Yes, ma'am.
That was supposed to have been Dug Hill. And I think there was a saltpeter mine up in there.
Really?
In that cave.
And if I remember correctly, too, we went by. Uncle Sam was driving. Grandpa was on the passenger side, and I was standing actually between them on the seat, as we used to do. But he also took me to a cemetery. I want to say Plum Creek.
Yes.
Is that up in that area as well?
No, it's a little ways back.
But I mean, it's up in that general area.
That's where a lot of the littles are buried.
Where would that be? Is it? Well, can you see it from the Monterey
Highway?
You're
probably not going to actually see it, but you go about, goodness, John, I'm not sure about how far, let's say 7 to 8 miles, and you would turn off to the right. I mean, it's just right behind a couple of houses, but you've got to know kind of where to look to see it.
Is it still open to the public?
Oh,
so
yeah.
If I were to ask somebody up there where
yes.
Plum Creek Cemetery was,
uh-huh.
I'll have to go by there.
Yeah, there's a lot of the littles buried
yes, ma'am.
In there.
Well, so tell me, you said your brother was 10 years older than you?
Yes.
So there's a fairly big gap in there.
Oh, yes.
How about school and things like that? Where did he go to school? Where did you go to school?
Okay, he went to Big Springs.
Okay.
Probably through the 8th grade.
Okay, Big Springs is...
That's up just a couple of miles from back this way from our house.
Towards Sparta?
Yes. Our home was about 2 miles further on up than the Big Springs school.
Okay.
Now, actually, the first Big Springs church, and probably was the original school, was over, just turn off to the right off of 84, and over by the Big Springs Cemetery. When, I guess, you know, after the war, the government started these employment programs.
Yes, ma'am.
And there was one, the National Youth Corps.
Okay.
And they built buildings. And they built a stone building down there to be the Big Springs School.
Wow.
And later, when they consolidated all of the schools in White County, it was closed, and so the church bought the building.
I see.
And the building had been, I mean, the church had been over there in, a big, long, white weatherboard building.
Yes, ma'am.
And next to the cemetery.
So... The school that he attended, was it the same school that you attended, elementary wise?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, John, I think that's right.
Was that a full school? Was it?
Him, it was. Now, in fact, it was for me too. But see, my mother homeschooled me, so to speak, the first 2 years of my school days because I had asthma really bad.
Yes, ma'am.
And she just didn't want to send me as young as I was, you know. But then after that, I went to the Big Springs school they put me in the 3rd grade when I went there, and I stayed through the 5th grade.
Yes, ma'am.
And then Dad was working, of course, in Sparta, so he would bring me to school every morning, and I transferred to the Sparta City School.
And Sparta had a full...
They had the full 8
First through eighth, or
yes,
whatever.
No, but okay. I didn't go to school in Sparta the whole time. But I went 6th, 7th, and 8th grades.
Okay, and then after that, you went.
Then I went to high school.
And that's
didn't
here,
have a middle school then.
Here in Sparta as well.
Yes, but not over here.
Okay.
It was back over. Well, as you start out, go to the courthouse and turn left. You start out North Main Street, and the old high school was up on the hill.
Really?
But it's totally demolished and buried now.
And then you went to Tech?
I went to Lipscomb the first year.
I did not know that.
Uh-huh. I went to there, and then I transferred to Tech.
What were you majoring in?
Well, it's another story.
I want to hear it. That's what we're here for.
I was at Lipscomb, and I'd registered for everything. I was going to be a business major. Well, we went into our first class, and they had put me in general chemistry. Well, I got in there. I didn't know what a flask was. I thought, oh, this is not going to work. What am I going to do? Well, I began to hear my friends in the dorm talk that were home ec majors talking about how they got to take this special chemistry because it's easier for home ec majors. I marched right down to the office and told them I wanted to change my major.
That is great.
And I did, and I got through the chemistry course. And when I came to Tech, I could make an A as easy as I made a B down there.
Really?
Sure could.
What caused you coming back to Tech?
I just wanted to.
Just closer to home?
Yeah.
And, yes,
well,
ma'am.
And my best high school friend was going to transfer. And I wanted to go with her, and so I talked Mother and Daddy into it. They begrudged the idea, but finally agreed. We had some kin folks over there. Of course, at the time, Quill Cope, who was a first cousin of Dad's.
Okay.
I might have told you about the great aunt of mine that had three children.
No, ma'am.
Two of them became college presidents, and the other one director of curriculum or something at Putnam County.
Wow.
And they lived up there. In fact, my great-grandfather Breeding, it was their home place.
That is amazing.
It really is. And so there's a funny story with that, too. As I told you, we had this one long white weatherboard building for our church.
Yes, ma'am.
And they had a kind of a strange service. It'd be strange nowadays. But we'd gather and we'd have classes. Now, the little folks met in one corner and the adults in another corner. Back in the back corner was the bigger children, you know, the
yes, ma'am.
Middle school and high school age groups. Then after class was over, they'd all gather back, and now the men and the women didn't sit together. The men sat on one side and the women and children on the other. They
really?
Did not sit together, John, until they moved into that new school building.
Are you serious?
I am serious.
Oh, my gosh.
But anyway, they had this little tradition of what they called taking up verses. And it meant that a man, to start off the worship service, he
yes,
would
sir.
Go around and nod to each person, and they would recite a verse.
A verse, yes, ma'am.
Well, they got to one of Aunt Dora's sons, who later became president of Florida College.
Wow.
They got to him, and he was just a little fella. He couldn't remember the verse he was supposed to quote.
Oh, no.
So he looked up at him, and finally he said, "Jump up, kitty cat, jump up high, jump up, kitty cat, your tail's on fire."
I bet that brought down the house.
Well, it interfered with worship for a little while, to say the least. But,
that's funny.
But that was, and then I distinctly remember my Aunt Dora Cope. She always brought the Lord's Supper.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
She brought it in a special basket. Had two lids, came up together.
Yes, ma'am.
And she would bring two starched white tablecloths. And she put one over the table and one on top of the things.
Welcome to the Whence We Came Project Podcast. My name is John Owen. The following is my conversation with Miss Louise Young.
I distinctly remember my Aunt Dora Cope. She always brought the Lord's Supper.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
She brought it in a special basket. Had two lids, came up together.
Yes, ma'am.
And she would bring two starched white tablecloths.
Wow.
And of course, we didn't have individual communion cups. We weren't a one-cupper. We were a two-cupper church.
Were you a two-cupper?
And you know, funny thing about that, Aunt Dora's husband developed throat cancer.
Yes, ma'am.
And he went to the men that serve and said, "Now you all take it to everybody else and then bring it to me." He didn't know much about cancer then.
Yes,
know.
Ma'am.
You know, that's kind of our church. And we didn't have Sunday night or Wednesday night. We didn't even have a preacher.
Really?
No. We had, as a small child, I remember the service going like this. When we'd come back together for the worship service.
Yes, ma'am.
There was a man there. Well, he was a good song leader. Always wore his bib overalls, you know. But he'd get up to lead a song, chew tobacco. Before he'd start to sing, he'd go to the door and spit.
Then he'd, what a great memory.
Then he would lead the song. But after he did that, and they'd have a prayer, and then we'd have one of the men would get up and read. Usually just read a chapter. Very few of the men would make any comments even.
Wow.
And then we'd have the Lord's Supper, and we'd go home. But we did have a two-week meeting in the summer.
Yes,
that's
ma'am.
The Great Revival. That building was a pretty good-sized building. And it was bigger than the current church. People would be sitting in the windows.
Wow.
They came, people that wouldn't set foot in the church, but they'd come to the big meeting, as they called it.
Yes, ma'am.
And
that was once a year, you said?
Yeah, once a year.
Wow.
And it'd go for 2 weeks.
Now, what was the reason for not having a pastor? They're just...
Well, they weren't available, for one thing.
Yes, ma'am.
And couldn't have afforded it anyway. But in the 40s, I'm going to guess mid-40s, Central Church of Christ here in Sparta...
Yes, ma'am.
...hired two preachers. And they were very similar to the old circuit riders.
Oh.
They went to each community church, and every congregation got one sermon a month.
Oh, wow.
And they made their rounds, and
yes,
then
ma'am.
They'd go back again.
That's remarkable.
But that was, and that went on for quite a while.
It's so hard to believe. I was talking to my children, who are 30 and 26, Dane and Denny, that I was coming to see you today and talking about memories of, you know, Aunt Mattie Pearl and different things. And I talked about, I remember visiting relatives of ours. I don't know where they were exactly, but I know up toward where you lived, but out in the woods, as I would say, and that did not have electricity nor indoor plumbing. That's in my life. That would be in the late 50s, early 60s.
Listen.
And Denny and Dane just could not even believe that they were so close to that period of time.
That's right. The children and your children and my children just cannot comprehend the things I tell them. I try to tell them about, you know, they all have to have church dinners now in the annex with a full-fledged kitchen and so on.
Yes, ma'am.
I said, that's not the way we did it when I was growing up. I said, we had dinner on the ground. So, you had picnic. I said, no, we had dinner on the ground.
Yes, ma'am.
I said, the women brought white tablecloths and spread them out on the ground, and they put their food on that, and you got your plate and went.
Yes, ma'am.
Got your food, and then you sat down on probably on the steps of the church building. And well, John, we didn't have, I grew up with cold heat in each room. No electricity.
Really?
Well, no, I said I grew up. I didn't grow up. But we got electricity when I was 6 years old.
I did not realize that.
And the men, after we got it, well, it was one of these rural co-op deals that finally got electricity up to that area.
Yes, ma'am.
The men were there wiring our house. And I had this little problem of sucking my thumb. And Mom had tried everything she could do to stop it. But I was nearly 6 years old. Well, the men were wiring. They got it all wired. And they turned it on. And I was standing there. They'd been kidding me all the time they was there working about sucking my thumb.
Yes, ma'am.
And said, you know, you got to quit that. This when we get this lights on, you won't be able to suck your thumb. You'll have to quit. Well, I just didn't believe that. And when they got it all done, they turned the electricity on, and I was sucking my thumb. And then they turned it off to check something. And when they turned it off, they said, see?
Oh, no.
Now, that's what happens when you cannot suck your thumb
with
this electricity. So that was the end of my thumb sucking.
You believed it?
I believed it. Yes,
that
I did.
That's great.
And then we got a freezer that shortly thereafter, and Mom started. I know very little about canning. I can, but I don't know a lot about it.
Yes, ma'am.
But she would can up until then, and then Dad got her a freezer, and that's next thing to heaven, you know.
Well, now, originally, the kitchen was not part of that house, right?
Like
It
was.
Okay. I was just thinking it was a. I know that when we visited there, I guess in. No. Prior to that ideation of homes and whatever else, the kitchen was not always part of the house. It was like separate from the house in case it burned.
Yeah.
Maybe not in that home. But
the stone house was just a box, you know, and on the right-hand side as you went in the front door, there was a living room and a dining room and a kitchen.
And I remember a big sliding, like a pocket door.
That went, as you went in, you had this room here, which Mom called the living room. And then you had the parlor.
Oh.
And that's where the big, they were walnut
yes.
pocket doors.
They were
huge.
I was 4, 5, 6, but they were huge in my
mind. They were huge to me.
Yes, ma'am.
And Mom, of course, when they turned it into a bedroom.
Oh, okay.
But on that side then, there was a big bedroom. And there was a small little bathroom and a little bit of closet space back there.
Yes, ma'am.
And then there was a small room that my grandfather used as his medical office when he came back from the Ravenscroft mines.
Yes, ma'am.
And then behind it was this big, huge, greened-in porch.
Okay.
And
was there a porch upstairs
yes,
as well?
We called it the sun porch.
Okay.
And it was over the other porch.
Okay.
The screened-in porch.
Wow. I remember, I slept up there the only time I ever spent the night at your house.
Really?
You were already gone.
Uh-huh.
But I'd grown. But, yes, ma'am. And I just remember how the breeze, and I was so afraid because I knew what we had, air conditioning in Florida.
Oh, yeah.
And I was so afraid, and Aunt Maddie Pearl and Nana said, oh, no, you'll be cool up here. And I remember asking for another blanket.
Yeah.
So, yes, ma'am.
That's right.
Wow. Wow.
But it was a lot of fun growing up there.
Yes, ma'am.
I never had a bicycle.
Going to ask, how about other kids and whatever? What did you do to play?
I had to learn to use my imagination and play by myself.
Yes, ma'am.
I still have a good imagination. I had practice.
That's a positive
But
thing.
I never had a bicycle because I had no place to ride it.
Yes,
see,
ma'am.
The road went right. Our yard was there, and the road was right with it.
Yes, ma'am.
We had a kind of a long walk into the front porch, and I did have a little tricycle.
Okay.
And I had a little scooter. Now, that's the old-fashioned kind of scooter, not one of these fancy ones.
Yes, ma'am.
But never had a bicycle because didn't have any place to use it.
So Uncle Sam, I know when I met him, he was already older and he had a truck.
Yes.
Did he drive all along, and did Aunt Maddie Pearl drive when you were younger?
She drove from the very beginning. In fact, when she was in high school, she drove to school.
Wow.
See, John's school, this farm was, when they moved down here, it was a mile from town. It was literally out in the country.
That. Yes, ma'am.
And so then first I think she had a horse that she rode to school.
Wow.
And then she got old enough and they let her drive. And so that's how she got to school. It was different times back then.
Yes, ma'am. Very much so. Very much so.
And I have some pictures in there of Grandpa Gillen was, apparently he was a very progressive farmer. He did a lot of putting things together to make them more convenient, you know, and things like that.
Really?
And he built a little, just a little kind of a den. It used to be a screened-in porch, and then he later enclosed it. But it was a screened-in porch, and he had a lavatory out there with running water. So he could wash his hands, wash off before he came in, you know.
Wow.
And then he built a bathroom right at the end of that.
Yes, ma'am.
And until then, they had the outhouse.
Wow.
Uh-huh. And, but I started to tell you, he did all that, and he got, and he built this long walk from his house to the barn, which was quite a distance.
Yes, ma'am.
And I'd say it was half the size of this yard.
Yes, ma'am.
And they had a little outbuilding, of course. And then he built in this little screen porch and then had water running into it, you know, and all. And in the meantime, he was making some headway in farming, too. And but I still farmed with mules.
Did he?
I don't guess there was ever a tractor on this farm till my dad had to take over the farm in 1946.
Wow. I had no idea.
Mm-hmm. And, the extension, at that time, the local county agent, who was, set up by the UT Extension.
Yes, ma'am.
Office, they were really very functional back then because there were so many things to teach people.
Right.
They had to teach people how to can, and then as freezers came in, they had to teach them how to freeze things properly.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
I remember Mom was talking to one of her friends one day who had been the home demonstration agent, and she says, well, Miss Iva, I cut off my corn to cream it and put it in the freezer. I don't cook it. Miss Iva says, and for you don't have to. But she says, I can't teach it that way.
Oh.
Because if I did, some of the women would cut off a whole dishpan full and set it aside for all day. And then it'd spoil.
Yes, ma'am.
Said, I have to tell them, you cut it off, you package it, and you put it in the freezer right then.
Wow.